You're listening to Pod Wars with Gary and Justice.
So, Justice, be honest with us. Are you wearing, like, the Apple earphone things under your actual headphones? The AirPods under your headphones?
I am. I'm double headphoning it right now.
It's kind of like, so you're basically saying you want to be a bougie, like, Apple follower, but want to appear like you're cool and chill.
I just need to hear you talk, and also the ability to, I don't know. Don't make fun of me. Technology is not working, okay?
You just don't want to be judged.
My computer's camera, for some reason, is not coming up, and this is a really, really annoying. So, yes.
We've done over 100 episodes, and come on, man. Got to figure out a camera.
I don't know. All I know is that I'm a free man. I no longer have a job. If you're looking for someone that is either doing something in comics or in science, let me know.
Or anything that pays reasonably well. He's ready for anything. I mean, maybe we can get more ads like that one guy from the manscaping company, but one day.
I don't know. I don't think people know this, but yeah, some guy from the Manscaped reached out and asked if we wanted to have an ad on our podcast. We haven't responded yet, but just think about it.
But if you see us suddenly, like, absurdly well-groomed, you know why. But anyways, guys, we're Pod Wars. We talk Star Wars and Marvel. I'm here with Justice. Say hi to the people, Justice.
Hello there.
And today we're going to do a little bit of our usual Mandalorian breakdown, but first we have some nerdy nuggets. Nuggets.
Crispy nuggets.
Spicy nuggets.
Nerdy nuggets.
Yeah, so the first nerdy nugget that I'm going to talk about is definitely that WandaVision's new release date is January 15th, 2021, which I think is a pretty big deal because that's, one, the first year since, like, what, 2009 that we haven't had any MCU content come out. And I also think it's interesting that there's kind of a significant gap between the end of The Mandalorian and the beginning of WandaVision, because I know a lot of people just get their... They sign up for the when Mandalorian comes out, watch it, and then cancel their subscription. So I feel like they should have moved it a little closer so that less people would cancel it so that they would keep on watching.
Yeah, it seemed a little weird for me. I mean, I'm just bummed because that's like the Marvel content I'm most excited for is probably WandaVision and Multiverse of Madness. So it hurts my heart having this long of a time between a Marvel kind of production.
Me too. But I mean, we're getting really great Mando stuff, and so hopefully it comes out. It January is right around the corner. We don't got a lot of nerdy nuggets. I wanted to mention that Assassin's Creed Valhalla came out. Gary, are you gonna get that?
I heard mixed things about it. I got Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I really enjoyed until I realized it has way too much, which I think is a major problem with all open world video games right now, is that they need to get more of the God of War vibe where they like have a ton of content, but not so much that my short attention span runs out of like focus, you know?
I feel like The Witcher 3 did it really well. Like, there was a lot of content, but it's more than God of War.
Oh, absolutely. Witcher 3 is the rare example of being inundated with content, but like I absolutely soak up everything. Like, I almost 100%ed Witcher 3, and I'm almost through my second playthrough of it. Like, I love Witcher 3.
I hope Cyberpunk is very close to The Witcher and not like Skyrim or other, like, Assassin's Creed kind of. But I might get the Assassin's Creed game after it comes out for a while. And then obviously with the big news, the new console systems came out and people have been struggling to get it or have gotten it. But if you're a true gamer, you know that you wait until the next series of iterations on that new console comes out before you actually get it, because there's always bugs and there's always something wrong with it. So that's what I plan on doing.
Same. And it always comes out with very few titles actually for it and like a ton of bugs, and they come out with a second version of it that's way better. So like, I always wait because I'm also cheap and I'm like, nah.
And I just literally bought a PS4 last year for Spider-Man. So I'm not going to go out and get the PS5 or the Xbox, whatever X, it's, I think that's what it's called, until
it's going on the tradition of stupid Xbox names. Like, it's right. Carrying on that tradition.
It is. Yeah. I don't get it. Let's see the biggest nerdy nugget that we have that I'm kind of excited to talk to you about is Star Wars related. And there was, I guess, like an article or like a book that came out that kind of talked about George Lucas's vision for the sequel trilogy. And if you haven't heard any of it, there are some really, really cool and awesome ideas that I personally would have loved to see adapted. One of them was the main villain would have been Darth Maul. The other one is that Luke would have rebuilt the Jedi Order. And then the other really main one is that Leia would have been trained and she would have also rebuilt the New Republic and basically became Chancellor. And in this book, it essentially says that she would have been the chosen one. So what are your thoughts on those, Gary?
I like everything except the idea of Leia being the chosen one. And this isn't coming from a Leia hater kind of stance. I just firmly believe Anakin's meant to be the chosen. Got to throw out the bad words there. But I firmly believe Anakin's the chosen one. That's not meant to change. But I love everything about this. I saw some quotes on it, and he kind of compared it to kind of post-Iraq war, war on terror kind of Al-Qaeda with the Republic, how a lot of the people who were very for the dogmatic view would go towards kind of extra groups carrying on the idea of the Empire, which we see in The Mandalorian to a large extent. And I think it's more logical change than the current sequel trilogy of being like, yeah, the Empire's back again.
And they would have had it where they would have continued the whole crime lord thing that Maul was trying to do in Clone Wars and Rebels. And he would have been basically like this big, bad crime boss, which I think is a really awesome idea. I love Darth Maul. Obviously, we're prequel loving podcasts. But again, I'm not going to say that I like these ideas more than the sequel trilogy. Like, the sequel trilogy still has some really enjoyable moments and, you know, can't go back and change it. But it is really interesting seeing what, George Lucas's ideas were before Disney bought it.
Yeah, and whether it would be better than what we have, I don't know. But I like it. Anything with Darth Maul, I'm going to love. I also love that Darth Maul has an apprentice that's basically a female Zabrak. And it would be cool to see kind of that Asajj Ventress, like dark female Sith force user type as the new sort of Vader for that trilogy. Right. A lot to love there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good concepts going on. But alas, George wanted some money, so we got Disney making them. Which, again, like I said, Kylo's cool, and you can hear us talk about our...
Wait. Can you repeat that for the listeners? Justice Kylo just admitted that Kylo is cool.
Sometimes cool. The fact that he's able to bring Rey back from the death, which Anakin couldn't do, makes him kind of cool. Couldn't bring Padme back, is what I'm saying. So yes. And if you haven't listened
to our...
You're
begrudgingly admitting that you kind of like Kylo Ren.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to our most recent episode with Dr. Kyle Johnson, David Kyle Johnson, where we talk about the sequel trilogy, he opened my eyes to enjoy the sequel trilogy and see what they did and see what for what they are. So I'm changing my views slightly.
Yeah. Go back to that episode, guys. It really, he blew our minds with some of his stuff connecting with the sequels. But otherwise, those are our nerdy nuggets.
Nerdy nuggets.
So, dude, before we go on to The Mandalorian, we got to give our listeners a little tease for what's coming up ahead, because we have a lot going on for upcoming guests.
We do, and we need like an announcements little jingle thing. Like, we need Evan to contribute to the podcast again. Just kidding. And make a jingle.
I want like a, hey Evan, if you're listening to this one, we want an auto-tuned Post Malone type style announcements jingle, so make that happen.
I'm just kidding, Evan. I understand you got kids and school and stuff, and yeah, we love you.
But seriously, we need a Post Malone style jingle. Anyways, so tomorrow, actually, we're recording this on November something or other. I don't know dates. I'm not a calendar. But 15th. Tomorrow, Justice and myself are going to be talking with two upcoming guests, both of them within the field of VR. One being Neth Nam, who's worked on a lot of Pixar productions, including Brave and Toy Story 3, and has also worked a lot for Oculus on different management and animation for VR. And then after that, we're going to be talking with John San Giovanni, who's also big within the field of VR and has done a lot within TED Talks and whatnot. And we're going to break down the main VR Star Wars experiences. So be excited for those. And then also, coming up soon, we're going to be recording this in December. We currently have Jessica Flowers, the voice actress for Toph in Avatar The Last Airbender, coming on to Pod Wars. So we're super psyched to talk some Airbender.
Yeah, and we haven't even dropped our Prancing Pony collaboration, where we talk about Lord of the Rings and our thoughts on the new Amazon Prime show coming up, and just, you know, the Fellowship of the Ring, and really kicking off our series. And that's awesome episode. I'm excited for you guys to hear that one. So yeah, we got, you know, more and more interviews that we're trying to schedule right now, but those two tomorrow, I am extremely excited for.
Super excited. And also, coming out next week, we have the interview with Pamela May, who's the hair department head for Marvel Netflix, and we talk over some of the most iconic geeky hairstyles and get her view on things like the Princess Leia Cinnabon, Kylo Ren's man flow, and I gush over my absolute love for the man that is Kylo Ren.
Yeah, it was a really fun podcast. It was very interesting just like hearing her perspective on hair, and also the fact that I was able to throw my mom under the bus.
Shout out to Justice's mom, Margie. Bro, we got to dive into some Mandalorian.
We do. So, I don't really want to talk about the second episode, but I feel like it'd be a disservice. I'm just going to flat out say it. I think the second episode isn't the best, personally. I've heard from... We're not going to talk about the controversy and whatever, all that stuff that's going on with Baby Yoda and whatnot. Like, they're like, whatever. We're not going to touch it. What I'm saying is I don't like it because I personally don't think it was very plot-driven. And I think Evan and I share a similar idea that when you have such short amount of episodes for a season, I kind of feel like that episode was a throwaway. I don't know. It was cool that I don't even know how to really pronounce them. The spider species that was in Rebels.
So those are the Krytnas.
Krytnas, yes. It was cool that they introduced them, brought them to live action, but I'm not really seeing the purpose of that episode.
So you said we're not going to jump into the Baby Yoda egg thing, but I'm going to jump into this one because I can see both views. So if you guys haven't watched, Baby Yoda chows down on the eggs of the Miss Frog Lady, and the eggs are basically her unborn children, the last of her line. Well, not even her unborn children, because they weren't... I don't know. I don't want to go into frog person anatomy, because I'm not a frog person anatomist. But Baby Yoda chows down on it, and people were kind of like, hey, that's not cool, because that's like her soon-to-be unborn children. Other people were like, it's a toddler doing fun toddler things, so like, chill out. I can see both ways. Like, at first I'm like, hey, that's probably not good, because that's her kids. But then I also think of all the toddlers I ever met, and they shove absolutely everything in their mouths and eat it. Like, it's just a toddler thing. And I was talking to my sister, like, about, like, my nephew in that episode, and she's like, I could totally see David just shoving everything in his mouth. Just being like, hey, look, alien eggs, and just chowing down on it. So I found it kind of funny. I don't know about you, Justice, but I found it kind of funny. It doesn't bother me personally.
Again, it doesn't bother me, but again, there are a lot of people that are bothered by it, and I'm not going to really go much. If you're bothered by it, we're sorry.
I get it, but I'm also like, it's a toddler.
Like, yeah.
I think, well, okay, since we're shamelessly plugging our old podcast, it's kind of like what we had with our CBC comic book couples counseling collab, where Jar Jar eats that little alien, and Lisa was like, that's not that far removed from you, Jar Jar. That's kind of how I felt with Baby Yoda eating that. I'm like, bro, that's like another alien baby just like you. Like, it's weird. But no, he's a toddler, and it was kind of cute.
Yeah. Yes. It's, yeah. What do I want to say? Like, I felt uncomfortable watching it, but I thought it was funny. I don't know if that makes sense. I was like, I can also see both sides. But at the same time, I didn't get offended. I did think it was humorous, but I can definitely see why, maybe someone would get offended. But that being said, the episode still sucks.
Dude, I didn't hate the episode. I didn't think it was great, but I didn't hate it. Like, I appreciated it. I enjoyed it. I thought it had a lot of good father-son, Baby Yoda, and Mando moments. Does that redeem the episode and make it worth the wait for it? Maybe not, but it had some moments I really enjoyed.
The whole purpose of this episode was just to give... I'm not trying to be one of those fans, but the whole purpose of like him taking the frog lady was just so that like he could get from point A to point B onto why he was going to find the Mandalorians, or how he was going to find the Mandalorians. As if he just like popped up and like, oh, there's some Mandalorians. People would be like, well, how did he do that? And so they spent a significant amount of time for, you know, them to get, or like how he would find the Mandalorians. And I feel like that could have just like, you could have like done that in 10 minutes, like shoehorned that in 10 minutes and not spent 35 to 40 minutes doing it.
Oh, yeah. I don't disagree with you at all. But I also know we're both the types that value story advancement more than character development in a way. Kind of like, okay, when we watch Lord of the Rings, we both are the types that are like, let's just skip to Two Towers because Fellowship is a lot of boring crap. But the people who love character development love Fellowship because they love that time of them just walking around Sam being like, this is the funnest I went from the Shire in my life. And they're like, ah, character development. And I'm like, ah, I don't care.
Yes, I agree. And I was talking to Dave from Pizza and Parsecs, and he said he loved the episode and thought it was great. And shout out to those guys. Thank you for plugging us online. Definitely check out their content. I'm going to see what they think about the second episode. It was cool. Obviously Dave Filoni's in it. That's always fun. He's another, he reprises his role of being a starfighter. That was awesome. I loved how they like didn't help him. Like they helped him. They killed the spiders, but then they were like, yeah, we're not going to help you. And then they like left, and you know, now that's why his ship, like you see in the trailer, where it's just kind of like floating through space, broken, because they kind of just gave him the middle finger after saving him from the spiders.
I love how basically the Racer Crest is just limping along through all of these episodes. Like, it is on the struggle bus so hard. But a few little nuggets from the episode that I found. One is that the Mos Eisley Cantina, so you see the lady that's basically the glorified babysitter with this gigantic ant dude. That ant dude is a Killick, who is also a character often in Star Wars Legends books. And they're playing a classic game from Star Wars, Sabacc, that you see a lot in Solo, A Star Wars Story. And the winning hand she gets is called the Idiot's Array, which is basically the same hand Lando has in a Rebels episode. So just the love of lovely little like Rebels and nerdy nods they throw in there. I love that. And the other one is about the spiders. So the spiders are, like I mentioned before, called the Krikna, and they originally were a concept art for Empire Strikes Back, but were used mainly in Rebels Season 2. Now, I saw online, I want to hear your thoughts on this, Justice, on many people think it's a callback to basically the planet that like Hera and Kanan, all those guys met those spiders on back in Rebels.
I don't remember. I did watch Rebels, but I don't remember a lot of it. I do remember them confronting those spiders, but I definitely think it's a callback and just like Dave Filoni giving like a nod, but I don't know if that's the same planet that they were on when they were confronted, when they like fought them.
That's the thing, because the planet that that had the spiders was the same one that had the Bendu, that kind of like force neutral being. And it was more of a deserty type planet versus a frost planet. So I think it's just a nod, even though I appreciate everyone getting excited seeing something from Rebels on live action.
I liked how it kind of seemed like the eggs that hatched were alien style or the thing, and how they crawled out and broke out. That gave me cool like horror vibes. But also, I really think they need to introduce this. I saw this online, and I echo, I don't know the guy's sentiment, or the guy who said it, but like I echo what he's saying. They need to put title cards of the planets that they're at, because that'd be awesome. Like if they did that, I know they mentioned it, but I just want to visually see it down in the bottom corner, instead of them just like saying it.
One, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Two, I want to make fun of you for saying I echo what he says, because that's a classic Bible study term.
I echo what he echoes.
Such a holy term for this Sunday, everyone. But I agree. I like that. Otherwise, like as a nerd, I'm like, where are they? Which we'll get into too with chapter 11, because we have some little hints at plants in that. But overall, dude, I don't hate the episode as much as like you and Evan do. I don't know if hate's the right word, but I enjoy it for the character development of Mando and Baby Yoda, and they're kind of like father-son squabbles of it being like a naughty toddler. I can see why people are kind of put off by the eating the eggs. It doesn't bother me, but I get it. I still enjoyed it, though. But it's you're right in saying that they could have summed it up quick.
Right. It's not that I don't enjoy it. Like I woke up really early and watch it like before work, but now I can watch it whenever I want because I don't have to work. But so like it's new Mando, it's new Star Wars content. I'm gonna enjoy it. I'm gonna like it. But like there's some that I like more than others. And this one I just didn't like as much, is what I'm trying to say.
Which I'd agree with as well. I don't think it's bad by any means, but I don't think I didn't leave there with my mind blown like I did with episode 11.
Or which chapter is the 11. Reason for the season for this podcast, because episode 11, Bryce Dallas Howard could do no wrong. I've said that online and I've said that to you guys. She is awesome and I love any content that she puts out.
This episode was incredible. Like, oh my gosh, man. I had it spoiled a little bit because I only watch it on Saturday mornings every weekend. And so I saw the little picture of Bo-Katan and I went, ah, and just quick put it away and then immediately had to watch it. But okay, let's break down initial thoughts here with chapter 11, The Heiress. What'd you think of the episode, bro?
I absolutely loved it. I love seeing the Mandalorian. I love seeing Din Djarin work with other Mandalorians. Also, super spoilers. Sorry for that. We're gonna definitely spoil this episode. So if you haven't watched it, pause it and then go and come back and listen to this. But loved him working with other Mandalorians. I got like Halo 4 vibes where like other, or like Spartan, like, what is it? Reach. I got like Halo Reach vibes where they're all fighting together, especially on the Empire ship. That part was so cool. My favorite scene is when Bo-Katan breaks into the ship and then has her like Assassin's Creed blade and stabs the ever living crap out of those three stormtroopers. Favorite scene in that whole episode.
I love that. I love the basically when Mando's going with Bo-Katan and the other Mandalorians, how he's kind of like in the back seat, just being like, what the F is with these people? And they're just being super badass. And it's kind of like, you see, like, oddly, it seems like he's kind of the lesser Mandalorian for a moment until he comes in later and does his usual awesomeness. But that whole scene's awesome. But let's start from the beginning here. So the Razor Crest limps in to the port there, and you see a Mon Calamari in a very lovely sweater. I'm proud of his sweater. Look it up, dude. The Mon Calamari sweater. It's like a very sweet looking Christmas sweater. But that's beside the point. he basically has the ship completely wrecked. And I'm like, okay, the Razor Crest is screwed. And you see that lovely meeting of Frog Lady and Mr. Frog. And they're like, yay, we still have at least half our eggs that weren't eaten. So that's kind of nice. And Mando decides, then basically goes into the classic kind of cantina scene for that planet. Now, one thing that I appreciated, even before the cantina part, is you see a lot of the Mon Calamari and the Corran. These are both species we've seen quite a bit, and they tend to be more on Mon Cala and kind of a seafaring creatures that are always at odds and in sort of a pseudo-civil war. So I found it interesting that they're on this kind of disconnected planet out there. And when he goes into the cantina, he sees a classic Mon Calamari, and basically is turned now towards the Mandalorians. And what'd you think, Justice, about the initial meeting of our Mando Din Djarin and the Mandalorians?
When they meet together, I thought it was great. Because okay, so first, like, when he's talking with the, like, backing up just a little bit, when he's talking with the Corn, and they're like, oh, I can take you to the Mandalorians. I didn't realize this, maybe because I was tired when I first watched it, but on my second watch, he's like suspiciously creepy the whole time and laughs when he's like, I can take you guys there. And he's like, heh heh, like that's a dead giveaway that he's being weird. And that's when I got that on the second watch. On the first watch, I was just like, la-di-da, this guy's going to be nice. And so I had a huge, like, my face just totally dropped when he smacked Baby Yoda's little carriage thing.
Oh, that freaked me out.
Right, and then this huge, it's almost, looks like a Sarlacc. And no, just like a weird, like, sea creature thing, eat it and bring it down. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, no way. What the hell? How is he going to get back? And, you know, obviously Din Djarin walks in, or jumps in. That's when the Mandalorians come and they kick ass and, you know, take names and they bring him out and they save Baby Yoda. But you have that initial meeting where she takes off his helmet and he like stirs like, oh my gosh, you guys are not Mandalorian. Like we just saw in episode one. And then she like lays the smack down with knowledge on why she's a Mandalorian and how he is raised by the Death Watch, which was a huge spoiler, and I love, or not spoil, reveal, and I loved that. Absolutely loved it.
I loved that, and they gave little hints of that along the way. Like, back in season one, where Mando is basically a child, he's saved by a bunch of Mandalorians. All of them have the Vizsla clan logo on them. So they hinted before that he might have been saved by the Death Watch, or at least the Vizsla clan, which back in Clone Wars was connected to that kind of terrorist group. So for those who aren't super familiar, when she mentions he's a part of the Watch, she's referring to Death Watch, which is a terrorist group from the planet of Mandalore that wanted them to return to their warlike ways and got into a whole lot of hoopla because they basically sided with Darth Maul. And so they apparently now have progressed to kind of a cult in which they just glorify this idealistic warlike Mandalore and form that creed, and this is the way.
So one thing that I did want to ask you is after, we'll get to it and we'll talk about it, but I want to, since you brought up This Is the Way, at the very end when she gives the information about how to find the Jedi that he's searching for, she says, "This is the way." And so I'm wondering, is she saying that sarcastically or like a slight to him, or is that a huge just Mandalorian like common phrase that they all use? It's not just Death Watch.
I think she used it as a slight to him when she had the idea of we're taking the ship, and he said, "No, that's not part of my deal." And she's like, "If you want to hear where the Jedi are, you're going to take the ship." And then she goes, "This is the way." It's basically just a screw you. You have to help me. Then I think at the end, she kind of uses it in a bit more of a acknowledging of the fact that they're collectively Mandalorians. That's at least the impression I had.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to know what your thoughts were. But the other two Mandalorians, super cool. Love their armors. I don't know how to like perfectly articulate this, but from the costume designs to the planets to their armor, it looked like it makes Star Wars just seem so. It makes it so like so lived in, so awesome. I don't know what the right words are, but like. The sequel trilogy seems so grandiose, and like this seems so like gritty and realistic, and like if you gave fans money to make a fan-made thing, and that's what we're getting with The Mandalorian. Does that make sense? Like, it just seems so authentic. I don't know.
Yeah, it has the authenticity that the original trilogy provides without the kind of grandiose nature of the prequels and the sequels, which I enjoy their grandiose kind of large scale aspects, but like The Mandalorian takes the grittiness of the Mos Eisley Cantina in A New Hope and then takes it to like the nth degree. And I even like how it took the kind of idealistic version of Bo-Katan's armor from the Clone Wars cartoon and adapts it to live action exceptionally well. Like, it was a spot-on representation of the armor, but in a way that felt so lifelike and not like something just straight off a cartoon.
Oh, I completely agree. So, basically what happens in the episode is that she has information that he needs to get Baby Yoda to the Jedi, and then, but they need him to help take out an Imperial ship that has all these weapons, and so they do this, like, apparently the Empire cannot just, like, jump right into light speed or, you know, go extremely fast coming out of the harbor because it's pretty small and I'm sure the thrusters would, you know, cause damage. So when it's going up slowly into the atmosphere, that is when they decide to hijack this ship.
And you get a really interesting view in kind of the, I don't want to say, but honestly, a little bit cult-like view of the post-Empire Imperials, of how they're willing, at least at the leader's standpoint, willing to commit suicide for the sake of the Empire, that kind of long live the Empire phrase, which is a little bit scary and kind of freaky.
It felt very, very Nazi-like, like super, like they, yeah, just like how he killed his own pilots and was trying to commit suicide and then through crashing the ship, and then like he does the famous, you know, how like you bite your tooth and normally there's like gas that kills you. This time there's electricity and he gets shocked and that's how he commits suicide. Again, I think this episode is so brutal. Like there's so many like scenes where people are getting stabbed, they're getting shot, the guy commits suicide, and in my head I'm like, Disney Plus is for children, but this is amazing.
Honestly, though, it was so brutal, so dark, and the action was incredible. And we're jumping around like crazy, guys. But when the Mandalorians come onto that ship, their gun action, kind of how crazy badass they look. And I love how Din Djarin basically just goes all out, like, I'm going to take every bullet, and goes straight down the hallway, throwing the grenades. It was so cool.
It was cool, and in my head I'm thinking, the Stormtrooper sucks so much, because all you had to do was hit the rocket on the back of his, like, jetpack, and then they would explode. But they just are straight up trash and can't hit, you know, the broadside of a Bantha or whatever he says. And it's just so... that scene was so cool.
I love
cool.
how they make fun of the Stormtrooper aim in this episode, too. They're like, yeah, they're awful shots. It's hilarious when they do that.
It's like it's been a meme, and then they just, like, add it to, like, made it canon how they're awful as it is. It's great. I love it. And then the whole... I think it's really funny that the commander is like, close all the doors, every door. I don't care what door, close it. And then he ends up giving himself up by giving the, like, control, letting the Mandalorians have control of the hangar room. And then that they get blasted out of the door. And you could just, like, see the main commander, Imperial commander's, like, face, like, you idiot. Are you kidding me?
It's real. That's so funny. But okay, before we get into more of the ending and kind of our thoughts for the next few episodes, we have to give a little bit of an idea for listeners who aren't familiar with who Bo-Katan is. So Bo-Katan is a true Mandalorian from the planet of Mandalore, and you see her a lot in more so the fourth season of Rebels, as well as the last season of Clone Wars. And she is the sister of Duchess Satine, who is the main leader of Mandalore during the Clone Wars, who
Obi-Wan's...
is also a love interest.
Yes, I was going to say Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan's honey.
Oh, yeah.
Obi-Wan's shoddy. And, but Satine, you know, gets killed by Maul. Obi-Wan's sad, blah, blah, blah. Check out the episodes. They're pretty dope. Now, her thing is that she basically, she was involved in a lot of things with Death Watch and all kinds of conflicts throughout Mandalore. She was both on the good side, the bad side, and at first, in the most recent season of Clone Wars, helped free Mandalore from Maul, and in Rebels, helped free Mandalore, or at least start with kind of rebelling Mandalore against the Imperials. And you last saw her before this episode holding the Darksaber, uniting all the Mandalorians. And it seemed like, okay, she, like, freed them from the Empire. Everything's great. And then you see the Darksaber in the end of Mando Season 1. And any Rebel fan is like, wait, then what happened to Bo-Katan if he has the Darksaber?
Right. The whole reason she's taking over the ship is because she's trying to get to Moff Gideon. And she's trying to figure out where the Darksaber is because she wants to reclaim command of Mandalore. And one of the things that stuck out to me in this episode is the level of propaganda that the Death Watch has instilled in their people that they bring in, how Mandalore is poisoned and how you can't go back to this planet, and just really, really affecting the way that they view, almost to the point like there are no other Mandalorians out there unless you're part of this clan.
Yeah, it's kind of off-putting. And it makes you kind of look at Din Djarin and his Mandalorians in a different way, as less of a noble people with a creed to more of a cult. I wonder how that's going to progress, if he's going to turn more towards kind of Bo-Katan style of Mandalorian, or if he's going to stick with his current way. But it definitely was off-putting for me, man.
Oh, for sure. I completely agree. The other thing that I guess we're getting to a little more speculation, is I like that they're going to introduce Ahsoka basically halfway through, the season. Yes, the name, the Jedi that she drops is Ahsoka, which is super cool. Cause this is a character that we've all wanted to see in live action. What I'm predicting is that he will meet with her, and then something will happen where either the meetup doesn't go well, you know, Ahsoka can't take Baby Yoda, or Baby Yoda doesn't want to go with her, and then which leads them somehow back to going to a conflict with Bo-Katan. And that's how, like, they're all of them are going to come back together and be together, and there's going to be some big conflict that's going to require him to recruit, you know, Carl Weathers' character and Cara Dune.
Interesting thoughts. My main questions going into the next few episodes are, well, Ahsoka and Sabine went off to save Ezra. What happened to Ezra and what happened to Sabine? Did they save him or did they not? And I'd also be wondering, too, did Bo-Katan actually send Mando to Ahsoka, or did he, or did she give him kind of a subverted way to get there? Because, for example, Corvus, looking it up, Kaladin on Corvus is the location that she gives him. And I didn't see Corvus in as a planet in any other Star Wars stuff when I was checking up for this episode. The only time it's mentioned is a name of a ship in the Battlefront 2 video game. So it led to a lot of people online wondering if it's kind of a misdirection or not, which would be funny listening back on this to see if that's actually the case. But I'm excited for Ahsoka to come into live action. I think Rosario Dawson does a great job. I still feel bad for Ashley Eckstein, especially because the actress for Bo-Katan is Bo-Katan's voice actress. So Ashley Eckstein must be like, what the hell?
Oh yeah. No, yeah, I feel so bad for her. And she's the one that made, like, really brought that character to life and has given, you know, deserves all the love and praise. So hopefully Dawson's able to give it that same, I guess, joy that we have for it, the character. Yeah, I like your theory. I didn't realize that the planet had not been mentioned before. Maybe the place that she's sending him is going to help him realize that the Death Watch is just a cult, and, you know, kind of making him realize that all his philosophies and ideas are wrong.
I think it's partly also a way to have him take his mask off more often, because they're like, we're paying big money for this actor, he better take off the damn mask occasionally. It's kind of like why Robert Downey Jr. takes his mask off all the time as Iron Man for no freaking reason. It's just because they're like, we're spending a lot of money on Robert Downey, he's going to show his damn face.
I think also in his contract, he has how much, like, screen time he needs to, like, his face needs to be shown. That's why when he's in the suit, it's when he's flying, it's his face, because, yeah, he wrote that in. But that's just a complete side other thing.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm super excited for the next episode. I think we're finally going to see Ahsoka, and we're finally going to get more of the kind of Jedi nuggets in The Mandalorian, which I think is going to actually add quite a bit to it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that they're answering a lot of questions that we have. Hopefully they bring in more. It was cool seeing Moff Gideon, even though it was only through a projection. I really want to know what he's doing, what he's up to. But I'm excited to see where this the rest of the season goes. Again, this episode was awesome, so I can't stress that enough. You really need to go watch it. You got any other thoughts, Gary?
Well, my other thoughts are, if you have any thoughts on Baby Yoda eating the eggs, any thoughts on whether The Passenger is a good episode or not, send them our way to @PodWarsPodcast on Twitter, or askpodwarspodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions, thoughts, or things you want us to talk about on the show. Otherwise, we have our episode coming up next week with Pamela May here, hair department head for the Marvel Netflix shows. We discuss everything nerdy hair, find out if Thor is wearing a wig, find out how the heck they did the Cinnabon look, and are rat tails for Padawans cool or not? I don't know. Maybe I'll have to listen to the episode.
Do you want to do a comic of the week?
I would love to do a comic of the week.
Comic of the week.
Good, because I read a comic right before, just so that for this episode, because I love you guys that much.
All right, what do we got this week, dude?
We're picking up right after where we left off in the last Mandalorian episode, and we're talking about Darth Vader number 7, which is, I liked it. Again, written by Greg Pak, and Inesio is the artist. So this one's called Into the Fire, Part 2, The Assassin. And right off the bat, you got some cool flashbacks where it's kind of readdressing when Darth Sidious told Anakin, you know, you need to purge the, you know, purge the order to the Jedi, and he, you know, Anakin's like, I did it, and Sidious is like, even the younglings, and he's like, yes. Which I thought that was really funny. And this comic, this what am I trying to say, this I want to say season episode, it's not an episode, this actual comic is interesting because Darth Vader's extremely pissed off with Sidious and has gotten to the point where, you know, he's gonna, he's like, whatever, like, he's, you know, he doesn't like me anymore, basically, and he's just gonna throw me away, and so
you're not my real dad,
basically, kind of, and so he crawls to an area or that fell in episode 3, the same room where he kills all of, like, Newt Gunray and all those guys, and there's a flashback to episode 3 and Anakin with yellow eyes, and then him, like, stabbing everyone, and then as he's, like, crawling, there is a dead Newt Gunray just chilling on the floor, decaying, and I'm like, that's pretty cool. Like, that's really dope. And then, you know those little rat mice droids or whatever that everyone loves to kick and has no love for? They're still kicking it and running around in this building, and they run into him, and Vader's, like, pissed and, like, smashes one of them, and then one runs away, and they all come back with different pieces, and they reassemble Darth Vader using old, like, battle droids. So his leg has, like, B1 droid legs, and he's got a B2 hand, and so it looks so cool, like, Vader with a big metal arm with three fingers, and the Sith assassin comes in and is like, Sidious doesn't like you anymore. I'm obviously paraphrasing, but basically, to the extent, Sidious doesn't like you anymore, like, we got plans, I'm here to kill you, and you can't use the Force, so I'm definitely gonna take you out. And Vader is hiding from this Sith assassin, and he drops from the ceiling with his lightsaber, and they have a really cool fight, and this takes them outside, and Vader, obviously, since he can't use the Force and the Sith assassin is, well, very skilled, he's doing a lot of more hiding and diverging tactics, and there's one scene where he's basically in the lava and hiding underneath, you know, stone, and the guy, the Sith assassin, standing on top of him, and he just, like, stands up, and he's, like, just standing in, you know, molten lava, his cape's on fire, and he's, like, holding the Sith assassin with his B2, or battle droid 2 arm, and is, like, choking him with the three fingers, and they have this conversation where it kind of seems like this is where Darth Vader realizes that Upper Palpatine has plans, you know, building the Death Star, and Vader doesn't really know about it yet, and, just to kind of wrap this up, they are fighting, and Vader hears a weird voice, like a Force ghost voice, calling to him on Mustafar, and the Sith assassin's like, I told you can't use the Force, and Vader's like, he's calling to me, like, I didn't do anything, and he runs into this cave, and the Sith assassin, like, uses a missile to cause the cave to cave in, and it ends with, and this is going to be so hard to explain, guys, but it is a creature that on top of the top body is, if you've ever read Charles Soule's comic, like the last, if you listen to our episode, there's Mustafarians. He looks like a Mustafarian with spider legs, and then underneath him, connected to him, is this huge pig head. It's just a big, big head. Its eyes are closed, and it looks like a pig. And that's the end of the issue.
What the heck? I mean, I still love the idea of Vader being challenged by Palpatine not to use the Force. I love that. The pig head is where you lose me there, bro.
Yeah, I don't know where he's going with this, Greg Pak. But Greg Pak has written some really great stuff. So I'm sure he's got something up his sleeve that we don't know about. But go and look it up. Darth Vader number 7. Written by Greg Pak. I don't know how to explain this. It's a weird pig baby head thing with a Mustafarian spider sitting on top of it. That's the best that you're going to get from me. And then the next cover is the eyes are like semi-open with like Vader standing in front of this thing. I don't even know what it is. It's the eye of...
I don't know what it is.
Hold on,
all I know is I want more.
It's called the Eye of Weebish Bog.
So it's a weeb is what you're saying.
I don't know if it likes anime.
I imagine it does. It's in a weebish bob.
So that is that episode, or wow, I want to say episode, but it's comic.
But what'd you think of the comic? Did you?
I liked it. I'm really, again, liking this series. It's cool seeing Vader put to the test in something that we've never seen before. I'm loving all the prequel callbacks, and I'm really enjoying that we're Vader on Mustafar again. And the fact that they introduced a new assassin is pretty cool. And again, he looks like a mix between, you know, Boba Fett and another bounty hunter. Like I wouldn't say his new look is anything to, you know, be excited about, but it's just cool that they introduced, the character who uses the blade that Rey is using to find the Death Star. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like how they include that character. I hope it adds more to the Rise of Skywalker. But yeah, I enjoyed that comic. I'm looking forward to the rest of this series and hearing what the heck happens with Pig Spider-Man.
Yeah, man. It again, look it up. It's the last panel on the last page. Looks weird. No, I didn't do a good job of explaining that, but yeah, it's weird.
Well, speaking of things that aren't weird, we got some more fun ahead of you guys with episodes, some really cool collabs and interviews coming up, and everyone have a great week.